Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So many white guys.
So many.
So many white guys. So what? How much whiteness? All over the place. God damn. So many white guys.
So many white guys.
Hello, Governor. Welcome to another episode of So Many White Guys from WNYC Studios. I'm Phoebe Lynn Robinson, your host, with my mate, Joni Mitch. Hello.
Hello, Phoebe. Phoebe.
It's like Forrest Gump doing a British accent.
Phoebe. Hi, Phoebe.
Can you do any other sort of accents at all?
I mean, I can do a more intense Minnesotan accent. I could just go there. Hey, Phoebes, it's great to be here. You know, how about that snow? Huh? Yeah, I like milk.
That was spot on.
I'm repping my people. I'm repping like my milk. Every time I go home to the Twin Cities, though, like for a long, like if I'm there on a longer trip, mm-hmm. like me saying yeah, by the time I leave, I'm like yeah, like it just not to say it goes away here, but it's like putting on a comfortable pair of pants. Like I'm just like ah,
it's a comfortable pair of pants that you farted in 1,000 times.
I don't have gas, so I wouldn't know what that's like.
Okay.
Okay.
Listen, Joni, I have to ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
How was your Mother's Day?
My Mother's Day.
What did you do with your mum?
What did I do with me mum? Well, my mom was in Minneapolis, so I did give her a call, and I'm a bit of a procrastinator, so mm-hmm. there's a package waiting to go to her in the mail. But yeah, so it was really cute. They had a nice day at home. I was just out there a couple of weeks ago. But you got to spend time.
I did.
Face-to-face time with Miss Octavia.
I know. Octavia Robinson. Hey, Mom. I knew you're never going to listen to this, but hey, boo. Yeah, I haven't spent like a Mother's Day with her in like a minute. It's been like several years. And so when I moderated my last book event with Mish in Toronto.
That's what Michelle Obama yeah. in Toronto. Yeah. You need a translation.
I feel like Toronto is going to catch on because it's so cute.
It is cute.
But when I finished moderating, Michelle was like, we're going to have like an after party for the final show in Nashville on Mother's Day. You should bring your parents and they could come to like, you know, the book event beforehand. And I was like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. I was like, my mom hates to travel, so this is 50-50. She might not want to do it.
Oh, my God.
And Mish gets it because she's like, my mom is the same way. She never wants to travel for anything.
Yeah.
So I FaceTimed my parents about it. And I was like, hey, guys, so I have some exciting news. You've been invited to the final show for Mother's Day. And my dad was like into it. And my mom was like, I think I'm going to be tired. And I'm like... I'm like, Mom!
It's so wild. It's so... You know what? When I told my mom that I was going to meet Michelle Obama when we did the Two Dope Queens special, she cried.
Yeah, that's like the normal reaction.
I just love, like, Octavia. Every single time I'm like, what does your mom think about you having, like, HBO specials? She just seems like... nonplussed.
The thing is, like, my parents are like into it. They're just not expressive about it. So they're kind of like always at a 3.
I'd say saying you might be too tired to meet Michelle Obama, I would say you're like giving your mom a 3 is generous.
A 1.
I'd say that's like a 0.25. That's 1 inch over from a dial tone. Do you want to meet Michelle Obama? I'm amazed that your dad was able to put a ring on it.
Well, the thing
non-committal.
Is, when he first proposed, she said no.
Octavia.
This is classic Octavia.
That's so, I mean, Octavia looks out for number one.
But so then the next day she texts it. She's like, your father and I are going to come to Nashville. Text me when you have all the details. And I'm like, okay, don't turn into, you know, Meryl Streep from The Devil Wears Prada.
She's like, my assistant will be in touch. Like, happy mother. That's what's so funny, though. You're like, I'm trying to do something nice for you.
But they're just so, like, and so they came to, like, the after party. Yeah. And, like, initially, my mom was like, we're going to stay an hour. And I was like, okay, cool. And so we're heading to the after party. My mom was like, I think it can only do, like, half an hour. And then, like, we got closer. She's like, it might be just 20 minutes.
What?
But they stayed for, like, a little over an hour. Here's the thing about my mom. I think sometimes she's just sort of, like, she's playing hard to get. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Has it always been that way?
It's just like my parents are just, they're a little on the fussy side. Like yeah. they won't admit this, but like they hate traveling. They don't like hotels. They don't like eating anyone else's cooking but their own. But they did have fun and like they got all dressed up and my mom wore like heels and
cute.
She was like, she was excited.
They looked great.
Yeah.
So did they meet Michelle?
They did. So we did like the,
Was your mom just like, eh? Was Octavia like, and your name is...
No, it was so cute. Like, you could tell, like, they were, like, a little... Like, they're a little more, like, on the quiet side. Mm-hmm. They're a little more reserved, and I'm very, like, loud and annoying. but they were, like, so sweet and, like, talking to her. And it was, like, really cute. And Mish was, like, you know, just being very complimentary about me. And it was just, like, really nice.
That's so nice.
Hello, everyone. I'm Michelle Obama, and on this Mother's Day weekend, I want to take a moment to honor all the mothers out there and wish you a happy Mother's Day.
Okay, Joni Mitch, you know what? I'm going to be a team player today, and I know it's time to throw it to some advertisers so we can get that cashola. So, are you happy?
Is this what having a teenage daughter is like?
Yes.
Yes.
For so many Black people, The Wiz feels like home. Like home. The new stage revival has Broadway buzzing. And as it gears up for a national tour, we'll consider the impact this story continues to have 50 years down the yellow brick road. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on the next Notes from America as we pay tribute to The Wiz. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, mofos. We are back. Did you like that? I'm hot out of commercial.
Mofos? Mm-hmm. That's pretty... compared to some of the language on this show, that's a little extreme. Might have to run it by the FCC.
You know what? I live on the edge.
You're so wild.
I'm punk rock, baby.
You're so punk.
But you know what? It's not about me and how cool I am. Crickets.
What is it about, Phoebe?
You're not, Joan, you're supposed to be like, what? You're so cool.
Phoebes, you're so cool. Phoebe, you're very cool.
Thanks, Joni Mitch. So are you.
Thank you.
No less is cool.
Who else is cool?
Our special guest today, this episode, I'm very excited about. Guys, I got to talk to one of my closest friends in life, the hilarious, thoughtful, gorgeous, sweet, kind-hearted Michelle Buteau.
I love Michelle Buteau. Just a gem. Just a gem. Listeners, you may know Michelle from a lot of her work. I first became acquainted with her as being a performer on the very first ever episode of Two Dope Queens.
I was like, oh my God, this is the one. And he came to visit me in New York one time, and both the cell phones were on the bed, and they were exactly alike, and it rang, and I picked it up, and this girl was on the other end. She goes, is Eric there? And I go, who dis? And she go, who dis? And I go, who dis? This went on for a real long time. Because we knew who the fuck this was.
She's just been killing it. It's so crazy how, like, time flies. And she is just, like, on a run right now. Like, she's on TV. She has a show coming out on BET called First Wives Club. She's doing shows on Netflix. She's in movies. She co-stars, actually, in the new Netflix movie that's coming out later this month. It's called Always Be My Maybe. The trailer just came out. It looks so funny. And it was co-written by the two other stars of the movie, Ali Wong and Randall Park. She actually plays Ali's character's best friend.
How you feeling?
Pregnant as hell. And I am so mad at Kate Middleton. I was driving to work this morning thinking about her taking those pictures on the hospital steps, like, what, 3 hours after she had a baby? And she had that royal diaper on. You know she had that diaper on.
I don't want you to talk about that stuff in front of the customers.
Cool.
Guys, aren't you intrigued? And there's even more Michelle coming your way, because in addition to all the on-camera stuff that she's doing, you can also hear her on a new podcast that launches today called Adulting. Pew, 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 pew. Now, someone I know works on that show. I wonder who that person could be. I think it's Ryan Seacrest. So, can we bring him
in? Wait. Listeners, you got the old classic Phoebe Robinson bait and switch. It's me. I work on Adulting. I'm the editor of the show.
Whew.
It's so fun.
Joni Mitch, this is like a pretty big deal. Like, you are just like killing the podcasting game right now. And now there's this new show coming out, and I've done it before, but people who have not gone to a live taping yet, can you tell them what to expect from Adulting?
Yes, the show is so fun. Basically, it's Michelle Buteau and her co-host Jordan Carlos, who's this like totally amazing and hilarious stand-up comedian. And basically, they just co-host this show that's all about the trials and tribulations of being an adult. So what they do is they invite a lot of amazing guests. They invite people like Naomi McPerrigan, who we love, Wyatt Cenac, Jim Gaffigan, you... Phoebe Robinson.
I did an episode?
Actually, Phoebe, you're on the very first episode. And like, what I love about it too is that like Michelle's chemistry and interplay with people is so great. And you hear it on the show, and you're going to hear it in today's interview too. I just love you two together.
Yeah, it was really cool. And the like, my favorite part of this was that we got to record at her house.
Nice.
And we recorded in bed.
How intimate.
It was intimate. I took my shoes off. I didn't fart.
So cozy, though, Phoebe.
It was really cute. It was like the most Brooklyn morning ever. She was eating, like, I had a green juice.
Shut
and she
up.
Had, like, avocado toast. So Brooklyn.
You're so much. You're too much.
But you guys, you're going to love this interview. Here we go. Michelle Buteau. You know what, Mishy? I'm very excited that you're doing So Many White Guys. This is season 4. I've wanted you on forever.
Oh, my God.
It's true. I mean, we've known each other. It's 2019. I want to say we met 2012 in San Francisco at, what was it, the Purple Onion? No.
I thought I met you for the first time at the NBC Diversity Contest at a Comedy Store in L.A., like 2010.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, when you used to wear vests.
Yeah, I want to say when I first started doing stand-up, I was wearing, like, a lot of vests. It was a lot of, like, cater waiter, very asexual.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, like, bad, like, off Broadway version of Chicago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
We had it coming. I used to do a black shirt and jeans.
Yes.
So I'm like, that's how everybody will take me seriously. Mm-hmm. And plus, I had a really good set the first time I did it.
So it was like you're,
But that doesn't always work because I orgasmed the first time I had sex and I like really try to do the same thing. I'm just like, am I just like taking your podcast down like 5 different? Sorry, you have questions. Let's get to it.
This is great. I'm so happy we're doing this.
And we're in, just to set the ambiance, we are at Michelle's house, downstairs area, and we're doing this from bed, you guys.
Yeah.
So this is very cute.
This is like what Hoda and Kathie Lee wanted to achieve, but we just did it without the wine. It's not wine o'clock. We're in bed together.
So here's the thing. Like, so many people who, like, know us as, like, being, like, really cute, like, hosting shows at Union Hall, doing, like, our own, like, comedy stuff, like, FaceTiming together. But, like, I want people to, like, know the Michelle origin story. You know what I mean? So, like, okay, you grew up in Jersey, but your dad is from Haiti, your mom is Jamaican. Can you sort of, like, talk about, like, what your childhood was like a little bit?
Sure. My dad is from Haiti. He speaks 8 languages. He's deaf in one ear. He is always the smartest person in a room, and he likes to let people know that. My mom, from Jamaica, half black, half white. Her dad's from France. And my dad went to Jamaica for, like, a spring break. They met and, like, hit it off, and he had to come back to the States, and they were pen pals for 6 months. And he's like, I just really want you to come to New York and, you know, come out on a date with me. And so my mom, you know, found a sponsor to come to America and saw my dad and was just like, this is it. This is the end. So, yes, mom from Jamaica, dad from Haiti, dated in New York, married in New York, eloped on their lunch break because she was going to be deported. And so they couldn't plan their wedding. And so my dad worked for Cigna for years and years and years. My mom's a customs broker, and they moved to Jersey to live that suburban life. So it was great. It was like the best of both worlds because I would go to Jamaica every summer. So that was like my island fix. And I got to see my Jamaican family. And then on the weekends, we would go to Brooklyn, you know, to see my Haitian cousins and my Jamaican cousins. I'm just like, oh. And it was really sort of just like, whatever you think the shy is, like, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And then I would, like, go back to our dead end cul-de-sac in Jersey and play with, like, these little white girls named Lori and Katie. And, it was weird at the time, it felt like, because I was like, well, what is life? But I'm really happy my parents exposed me to a lot of stuff. And I think that's also, like, the good thing about being the only child. It's like they just put you in their backpack and you just go.
Do you feel like, because, like, I've talked to other people who are, like, only kids. Like, I have older brothers, so I, like, have, like, that little buddy growing up.
Yeah.
But, like, I talked to other people who are only kids, and they felt like they sort of matured faster just because they were mostly around adults.
Yeah, you're the third person. Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, when you are the only child, like, it's just hard being your parents' everything. Mm. And also, when they get older, that is hard on you as well because there's no one to sort of share that burden with.
Okay, so you said something about being your parents' everything. Do you have, like, an example of, like, either, like, growing up as a kid, like a teenager feeling that, or even, like, your early adulthood when you're like, all right, I really got to, like, have maybe that this super successful career because I'm, like, their only kid?
In college, it was sort of just, like, just finished college. Mm-hmm. Back then, it's just, like, learning disabilities were not on the forefront of anybody's mind. It was just, like, you're smart or you're not. You're lazy or you're not. And so I didn't even realize that there was this, like, more than one way to learn something. Mm-hmm. And that was never a conversation. So they always thought I was just, like, very bright and emotionally aware, but just, like, not very book smart. And so, you know, there was a lot, especially because my parents are, like, very book smart. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there was always just, like, not like a disappointment, but definitely just like a, well, we're going to have to do it this way because Michelle can't do X, Y, and Z, you know? And so I think, you know, my mom, when she talks about me when I was little, it's so funny. She's just like, you were just like wildly independent. And I'm like, did I have a choice? Like, I had no choice. Yeah. She's like, at 5 years old, you were setting your alarm clock and making your breakfast in the morning and, like, setting out your clothes. I'm just like, I was. I still do that, but that's nice. And so, you know, for me, when I was, like, going to graduate college, I just wanted to leave. I just wanted to have my own place.
Where'd you go to school again?
I went to Florida International University, which is the college you get to go to when you can't get into University of Miami. Hey, y'all.
You know, I've known you for a decade, and you're so, like, loving and bubbly and sweet and complex and deep and very smart. So I'm kind of, like, wondering, like, what you were just, like, little, like, Michelle with, like, her little freckles and her curly hair and her, like, big old titties as a teenager. Like, what Lord. Were...
Lord.
What were you like?
So sweet. And then you went to like her big old booty. she was so caring and confident and quiet, but she got that booty. She got that juicy booty.
But like, what were you
just
like?
Just off in a corner reading, writing her poetry, then waltz work. And Lord have mercy. I mean, shit.
That's how you get them. You like butter them up and then you drop in like a little bit of crass at the end.
Fuck.
But what were you like as a teenager?
Oh my God. Well, you know, I had this body before I was ready. Mm. So, you know.
Not ready.
She not ready for them titties. A memoir by Michelle Buteau. So, like, you know, I wanted to be a kid longer, but, mm-hmm. you know, I had these titties since I was 12 and it was like, ugh. You know, just sort of figuring out how to be a teenager and also be sexualized by gross men was a thing that nobody wanted to explain to me. So I was a bit shy and I wouldn't stand up straight because my tits were so big. And so I'd like hunch over because, you know, you're not ready for them.
Yeah.
And so I was like one of those quiet people. But then when you got to know me, I didn't shut up. A lot of dancing in the mirror, a lot of like taping TRL. I would have been Debbie Gibson's video hoe gladly. A lot of quiet performing. I always wanted to be in a high school play, but I was like too shy.
Wow. I just can't imagine that. But yeah. I think it's also like, you know, I talked to Alana about that too, because she like started developing pretty young as well. And, you know, it's sort of like, how do you think it sort of changed the way you viewed yourself when you're getting this sort of sexualized attention? Because you are only 12, so you're just like, I'm still a kid. I'm just, you know, like watching like my favorite shows on TV. I'm hanging out with my friends. But then now you have this male attention that you don't want, that you can't fully process. So how did that affect the way that you view yourself? And how did it sort of like shape the way you grew up as a teenager?
Well, I mean, every teenager, not every, I don't want to speak on behalf of all teenagers, but there is that thing where you think something's wrong with you because nobody else is going through it except for you, even though a lot of people are. So it was just like, why do I have to look like this? Why do I have to have this? And it's always like my mom always says, the grass is greener when you're standing in shit. My friends who hadn't developed.
Okay, where's her book?
Curry chicken soup for the soul. So stupid. What is this? Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of friends in high school who had not developed yet, but they were fast. They were like, oh, I want to like, you know, make out with this dude. I want to do this. I want to do that. And, you know, because I was so like body, yaddy, yaddy, you know, before everybody else, I'm just like, but we could still play with dolls, right? You know what I mean? Like, I just want to hold on to it longer. Yeah. And it really wasn't until I went to school in Miami where I saw women with all shapes and all types of sizes and curves and this, that. And then there was like so many island people and South American people who just sort of just, you know, owned who they were and their sexuality and didn't make it a thing. And it was beautiful. And I couldn't be more grateful than to go to school in a place like South Florida. Yeah, where it was like people look like me and I'm like, oh, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you do it.
I think that's awesome. And so I'm always like super into like how and why people get into comedy, because I do think it's very, you have the people who like, they really need the sort of like positive like energy that they get from being on stage. You get that attention that like fills something for them. For other people, like they're a little bit shyer in real life. And so like this is where they can be like really confident on stage. And I think I sort of fall into that category. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like an extroverted introvert, but I feel like you started doing stand-up shortly after 9/11.
3 days.
Yes. And so what I'm curious to know is, did you always want to do comedy before that? And then 9/11 happened and you were a video editor, so you were like editing footage of that for television, for like the news.
Yeah.
And so did that make you be like, well, I just want to pursue my dream of doing comedy, or do you just want to change your life completely?
You know what? I didn't want to change my life completely, mm-hmm. but I was like, this 9/11 stuff is really messed up. So I wanted like some sort of release, but I never had a dream to do stand-up. I don't know. I don't even remember what my dream was 20 years ago. I think it was like to be a mom and to be successful and happy in whatever that capacity was, right? Mm-hmm. So especially when so many people have told you, you can't be on TV. You can't, no one looks like you. You're too big. You're too fat. You're too light. You're trying to act too black. You're always like too this or not enough that. So mm-hmm. I was like, cool. Production is where it's at, because every day feels like a different day and I still get to be creative. But I will say, I think I got into stand-up because people told me I should do stand-up. And I'm realizing now, looking back on it, I was just too much. I needed to do stand-up because I was too much for one person. Mm. Very intense. My mind works very fast. I like to talk to people. I like to, you know, host a dinner party, but with like no dinner. You know, I like to engage. I like to make fun of people. I like to do a lot of things. I like to, you know, share stories. And I feel like my friends at a dinner party be like, bitch, we heard a story. But, you know, I didn't even realize I had a comedic voice till like my coworkers at WNBC, like I would write emails about my day and they would forward them to other people and be like, this is so hilarious. You gotta do stand up. So yeah, I guess like I had a voice and didn't even know it till people told me, which is so dumb. But like, look, Maya Angelou didn't talk for how many years? Not that I'm comparing myself to her, but I'm just saying like we all have a journey and sometimes we just need help with somebody facilitating it. What? No? I know. I do turn into Tracy Morgan when I'm tired. It is not okay. And then if I'm tired and hungry, I'm like, honey, boo-boo. I'm like, I want to get the meat. I'm going to go to bed. It's like, not okay. Stop.
But I want to say you're in so many movies right now. And I'm really excited.
Yeah, put me in your movie. I'll improv that shit. Make it better, bitch.
Okay. I got to write a movie first. But when I write one, you'll be in it. But I'm really excited.
You know what's funny? Here's the thing about people. This is the thing people don't know about Phoebe. What? People just say that stuff. Like, when I write a movie, I'm going to put you in it. And you're like, okay, great. Like, you have a great idea. You're going to take it to Shark Tank. You're never going to do that. But the thing about Phoebe is that she will actually motherfucking do it. And it'll be like either 3 minutes from now or 3 years. And she'd be like, bitch, remember when I said I want to write that movie? He's like, no, I don't remember that. Because so many things have happened, including your farts. Sorry. What's the question?
Okay. Thank you for that ringing
endorsement.
You're welcome.
Like, I got to the point.
But I wanted to say, so you're in so many movies right now. I'm really excited about this movie you're going to be in with Ali Wong, who's also another one of my favorite funny comedians, called Always Be My Maybe.
Yeah.
It's coming out on Netflix.
Always Be My Maybe.
But can you talk about that movie and like doing more movie work? You know, it's a different sort of muscle to flex because stand-up is so much like your vision, your voice. You write, you edit everything. And then with a film, you sort of had to be of service to someone else's vision.
Yeah.
So can you sort of talk about, like, what it's like for you? Because you're so big and so bold and so, like, you don't want to dull the edges on you because it's going to be counterproductive. You
well,
know what I mean?
I think that's the great thing about a good director. And Nanochka Khan, who directed this, you know, has been, it did like Don't Trust the Bean, Apartment 23, and also Fresh Off the Boat and like a bunch of other stuff. When you work with comedians or comedic actors, you know, you really have to be part visionary, part director, part therapist, and like lean into, you know, what makes them shine. And mm-hmm. she was able to do that in a way where I really haven't had that before. And that's amazing, you know, because you also, like you said before, want to serve the story, but you know, you have to put your little isms and your shine and your stank on it. And I feel like movies, much like stand-up, is just like having a conversation. Like once you're in the conversation, it's great. Stand-up is my story, but the movie is this person's story, and I'm more than happy to be part of your story. Anyways, Always Be My Maybe. The great thing about, and this is why I think I'm in a lot of movies right now, is because diversity matters in a way where it's just so much more than a hashtag, you know? And much like you and Jess, like Two Dope Queens and, you know, Crazy Rich Asians, you know, all these people doing things that aren't straight white people, they're like, oh, executives are like, proven concepts. Okay, this is amazing. We need to like really lean into this because they just see numbers. And for us, like little Asian kids watching this on a big screen, they're just like, I feel represented. And, you know, even like a 52-year-old black woman watching Two Dope Queens is like, thank God this has happened on HBO. Do you know what I mean? And so I think for this time now, it's such a beautiful time to like just really own who you are, whatever that is, because that's the only thing that will really translate, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your work, like whatever you do, whether it's like hosting, stand-up, acting, you're always like trying to tell your truth and trying to tell your story. And I think that people, audiences really connect to you because of that. And I feel like now going to like your next endeavor, you have like your new podcast coming out today. Boop, boop, boop.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yes. It's called Adulting.
Yes.
It's co-hosted by you and Jordan Carlos. Yeah. And it's a live show. I've done it before. It's super fun. And you just talk about the true trials and tribulations of being an adult and make it funny and also make it relatable and interesting and people can feel seen in it. And so I want to know, first of all, why did you guys decide to make a show around this theme? And maybe like what was like one of the first times you really truly realized like being an adult is hard fucking work?
Oh, man. God, so many questions, girl.
Well, I'm a good interviewer.
Well, you know, Jordan, much like us, has been a very long time friend in comedy. Mm-hmm. We were just hanging out after a show, just bitching about all the stuff we had to do. And I had a couple of dates booked at Union Hall, and I'm just like, I was supposed to, and you know this better than anybody, I was supposed to work on my material, write new material, put it up, you know, work on my new hour. And I was just like, why don't we just go do our thing and like talk about adulting? Because this is crazy. You know, he was talking about taking care of two kids, mm-hmm. and a dog and like living in Bay Ridge. I'm like, oof, it far from everything else. and between like his life and then like, you know, me being a person who's married, also doing the road a lot and trying to find a balance between having like a civilian type of life, dinner every night, you know, and I love to cook, and it's just like, how do I do that and still go out and do these shows and stuff? And we were like, we realized that we were just like in this group therapy session, but it was just the two of us, and we're like, why don't we just like apply this to stage? And we know so many great comedians and, you know, actors and, you know, I guess famous people, and, you know, everybody can be funny. Everybody can show up and do their job. But like, what happens when we get to sit down and have a different conversation? So really, it was just like a passion project. And then it, you know, sort of turned into this podcast, which is really fun because these conversations are too good just to like, you know, have them be lost in like a dank, dark room in Brooklyn somewhere. So I'm really proud of it. Jordan's amazing too. He's like my favorite blurred.
So I do want to like switch gears a little bit because we are on the theme of like being an adult. And
yeah.
I want to get a little deep if that's okay with you.
Oh my God, go deep.
And so, you know, I've been like on the periphery of like your journey to motherhood. Mm-hmm. And it is truly like if you're not friends with Michelle, it kind of like sucks for you because mm-hmm. to see her be a mom to her two twins, it is truly so beautiful and awesome. And I'm a person who like hugely does not want to have kids. And it's just like the most heartwarming and loving and tender thing. And we would just have so many talks about like all the dreams and like all the things you're going to do when you become a mother. And you sort of like had some struggles with it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To say the least, God, I don't even know where to start. So I have a benign tumor mm-hmm. in my brain, my pituitary, which makes my body think it's pregnant. And so I take medication to shrink the tumor and then also to just have like regular levels of prolactin. I don't mean to get like a brown titty Dr. Oz and a bitch, but just to give you some background. And so essentially, you know, my husband and I have been trying to get pregnant for 5 years and we were doing IVF, and you know, after 4 miscarriages in 2 years, we came to the conclusion that my body is just allergic to my husband's cells. But in that time, you know, between going to the hospital 3 times a week to get a sonogram and your blood taken and like the needles and this, that, and the other. I'm still running around doing shows, flying to LA, doing the road, trying to be happy clown. And that's exhausting. You know, it's already exhausting to travel and you like love what you do and you're fine. But if you're hiding something sad and then putting on a brave face, I'm just like, Tina Turner, how you do it? It's very hard.
Yeah.
And so there weren't a lot of people I could talk to, which really fucked me up all the way because my whole thing is truth telling. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad that you are one of those people, especially, you know, it almost worked out for me to talk to you about it that because you didn't want kids. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes my friends who have kids didn't mean to be condescending. But it was just like, you'll see what happens when you, well, maybe if you lost weight, well, maybe if you didn't work as much. And I don't need to hear that shit. Yuck. but yeah, I remember we went to see Erykah Badu in Coney Island and I was pregnant at the time, but like not very far along, maybe like 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And you were like, what are we drinking? And I was like, water. And that is weird. And it was like a needle on the record. You're like, why?
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I think it was like the first or maybe second time. Maybe it was the first time. And I felt comfortable enough to be like, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. And it was like so exciting. We like had truly the best night ever.
We had the best night.
It was so fun.
And it's also a great thing, like hanging out with friends who don't drink a lot. Because it wasn't like peer pressure, like, oh man, now no Pinot Grigio, how are we gonna enjoy Tyrone? And it wasn't like that at all. You were just like very on board and happy, and I'm like, dope. So gosh, I don't even know if it was a week or a couple weeks later I had a miscarriage, and you were so great. You just showed up with some flowers and took me and my husband out to dinner, and you're like, let's just get your mind off of shit. And like, I truly never forgot it. But then it felt like every time we talked, I had a miscarriage. I was like, this isn't my thing. That you just happened to call during this very specific week.
Yeah.
You know, we ended up going with a surrogate because we had a bunch of embryos, and that was also crazy and wild. And I realized, you know, I give a lot of myself to my job, and now I need to keep something for me. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just like I just had a very quiet year last year where, I'm not hanging out as much and I'm not come over my house for dinner type of person anymore. But, you know, if my friends are still there and still pick up the phone when I call, then I know that they're true blue. Which is you.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you. But to stick on the, you know, whole like issue of like fertility stuff, is that like a lot of times, like when you're going through it, like it's so stigmatized, so you feel like you can't like talk about it with people. And then for people who aren't going through it, it's like you have to learn how to be a friend in a way and like really like show up for another person and like really be there and just like listen. And so I guess you having gone through this and come out the other side with like two amazing, gorgeous,
they're so beautiful,
lovely twins, like
Hazel and Otis.
They're so cute, you guys.
They're amazing.
Like, what sort of advice would you give to people not only going through fertility issues, but for friends where you're like, these are some things like where it's like this really, you showing up in this way, I think will really benefit the person who's struggling through this process.
I mean, I think this is sort of like a general rule for a lot of things because people are going through shit, like whether they're depressed or anxious or fertility issues, right? And so for me, it felt like every time I brought it up or people were like, why aren't you like happy? Or, you know, like I felt like people were uncomfortable if I wasn't happy clown for them. Mm. And so that made me just want to stay home. And if people would just let you grieve in your own way, like I still want to go out to brunch. I just don't want to be, hey, girl, hey, brown titty, let's have another mimosa. You know what I mean? Like, let me just do my thing. And when I would talk to people about it, they didn't know what to say because they've never even had this conversation before. And like the best thing you could say to somebody who was like, I just lost a baby, or I really want to have a baby and I don't know how to afford it, would just say, I'm sorry. I am so sorry you're going through this. If you ever need to talk about it, you just let me know. That's all you have to say. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not trying to get an answer for somebody. I am not trying to ask people for money. You know, it's just to have a hand to hold or a shoulder to lean on or, you know, someone to hug. Like, that's all you need. Also, self-care. A lot of people think self-care is selfish. And if that's selfish to you, then be fucking selfish. Go get a manicure. Go get a massage. Go see a movie. Go take time for yourself. Because you're giving yourself so much to this thing that you want that it really is like another job. And, you know, who isn't tired of having two jobs or three jobs or four jobs? Yeah, man. Like, I remember after maybe the second miscarriage, I called my mom and she was like, were you crying like in front of your husband? I'm just like, what the fuck does that matter?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If I have to take a shit on the kitchen floor in front of my husband to feel better, that's what's going to happen. You know? So that too is like a thing. Oh, don't even get me started about my mom. I have to save this for therapy tomorrow. Adulting. Speaking of which, go to therapy.
Ooh, I love that. That's really good. And so I want to just like, now that you are a mom and you're about to like have like your first like Mother's Day, how do you feel?
This sounds so corny, but every day is Mother's Day for me.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. I mean, every day is Christmas for me. Every day is special. And I felt that way when I first got married. Not anymore. I'm so tired of him. I'm just kidding. I love him.
We love husband.
But like when you find your people, your clan, your core group, you know, I feel like I found my people. Like my husband's my person. And now my kids are my people. I'm just like, oh, shit, this is dope. You know, I got a crew. Like I've always wanted to be a mom since I can remember. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad that I'm afforded this opportunity to be with these little souls. I've been waiting so long to meet them. I'm just so happy.
Oh, I could tell. So I texted you last night. I don't know if you got my text, but this was very, I was like, when I saw it, I was like, and I was like freaking out in my apartment. So, okay. So, you know, you know, that thing that Sean McCarthy does, is like meet me in New York City. And it's just sort of like he interviews like comedians or whatever.
Yeah.
And you did it in 2013. Mm-hmm. And there's this question that you asked, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? And then your answer was having my own show and a couple of interracial children composting in my backyard in Brooklyn. You fucking did that. Do you not see how you spoke that into existence?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. I don't compost anymore. It's too much work. Oh, God. You know, between picking up shit from like me, my dogs, my babies, and now it looks like the earth is taking a poo in my backyard. I'm just done. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing too, right? Mm-hmm. Like if we don't remember anything from this crazy, stupid conversation that we just had in my bed, which is so much fun, it's just like there's nothing wrong with saying what you want out loud. You know, speak that shit into fruition. Because when you say it out loud, you're really just reminding yourself that you want it. Mm-hmm. You're not even telling people. You're putting it out there for yourself.
And the universe is hearing you. And it's like giving you like clues, or it might like push you in a certain direction that you're not even thinking about to get you to like what you actually need and want. You know what I mean? So I am a big believer in like, say it out, do like an email with friends and do like a little sort of like, these are my intentions, do a vision board.
Yeah.
Do all that stuff because the universe is listening.
I'm into it.
Yeah. Well, Miss Michelle Buteau.
Yes.
Phoebe this Robinson. Has been so fun.
This has been a lot of fun.
I love sitting on bed with you.
Aww.
Just talking, looking at your beautiful curls.
Oh my God.
And congratulations on everything. I can't wait for more episodes of Adulting. I can't wait for like all of the things. You're amazing. I adore you.
Jesus, why didn't you give a speech at my wedding? That was so nice.
Ooh, do you think you'll renew your vows?
10 years in Italy.
I'll be there.
Perfect.
Done.
Boom.
Buongiorno. Does that mean good morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
You did it.
Buonanotte. Buonanotte. Grazie, grazie.
Yeah, thank you, thank you.
Yeah.
Prego, prego.
Prego, prego. Oh, Joni. I had to take it there, and it got real at the end.
I know. She's got a really, really powerful story.
So guess what, guys? This episode's over, but you know what you're about to do now?
We got a little treat for you listeners.
It's called a trailer for a show called Adulting.
That's right. Get a little sneak peek right now.
Hey, everybody, I'm Michelle Buteau. Ow.
And I'm Jordan Carlos, also ow.
And we host Adulting,
the newest comedy podcast from WNYC Studios, where we learn how to be adults together.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Jordan and I have been friends for a very long time, and we have been through a lot together. Like
so many bottles of rosé.
So many bottles of rosé, hey, hey. Yeah. And you left your man bag on a roof one time and had to give it to you.
Your dog stepped on my foot.
Oh, God.
And one thing we've learned is that adulting, it'd be hard.
Yeah.
We're all trying our best to pay taxes.
Yes, raise these kids.
And get that rent paid on time.
Plunge the toilet and, like, wash your hands right after.
And sometimes you just gotta talk about it.
I have a very serious daughter. We gave her this book, right? It was like, Little Leaders of Color. And she goes, I've been meaning to read this. Like, you're 6 years old.
I have a pug chihuahua who's 16, and like she woke up at like 3 in the morning, and when she wakes up, I know she has to pee, and my husband won't let me get dog diapers.
So
you know what I did?
Yeah.
I just put her in the bathtub.
What?
I was like just peeing in there. But then she ended up taking a shit.
And then we bring up some of our favorite performers to share their stories.
Folks like Phoebe Robinson, Jim Gaffigan, Daniel Brooks, Ben Sinclair. And let me tell you something, honey. They got some good stories. Like this one from Wyatt Cenac.
By the time I got The Daily Show, my car had been repossessed. I had lost my apartment. I'd moved in with a friend of mine.
The dog was the first to leave.
Yeah, the dog smelled it. Like, you know, how they, the dog was like, you don't smell like good credit.
And together, we answer questions from our live audience about some of the major issues of the day.
How do you stop watching Netflix?
What is the amount of money where a Venmo request becomes petty?
At what point is it weird for your mom to keep making your doctor's appointments?
What is an acceptable amount of money to spend on pillows?
Oh,
that's some adult-ass shit.
It's like group therapy, as if you were, like, in Europe. You know what I mean? Just, like, better and cheaper.
Right.
With, like, really good biscuits, maybe strobe waffles.
So join us for Adulting.
Join us, and just, like, let's all grow the fuck up together, you know? It's time.
Oh, my God. Joni, that was so dang cute and so funny. I love Michelle and Jordan together. They have the best chemistry. So you know what, guys? Go listen to Adulting. I'm in the first episode. Brown titties in the house.
You too. Oh, isn't that the name of your comedy show with her too?
Yeah, Brown Titty Hour.
Brown Titty Hour. It's so fun. Well, Phoebe, I think it's time for the credits.
Oh my gosh. You guys, listen up. I do. Here are the credits. I do this entire show myself. The end. I book it all. I do all the research. I write all the questions. I do all the editing.
There's literally two people in the control room who do so much work on this show.
I do all
the
sound design.
You're being incredibly disrespectful.
I do the sound design.
Uh-huh. Can you show me some of the sound design you do?
So what you do, here's what you do. You turn on your computer.
Yeah.
Duh.
What software are you using, Phoebe?
You know what? Here's the thing, like, I have
Reaper,
this, like,
Pro Tools.
It's like, I use Pro Tools, obviously.
Uh-huh. Industry standard.
Yeah, it's like the basics. And so you just queue up an episode.
Right, uh-huh.
And then I just click in there, and I'm like, oh, minute 5, I want to put in, like, you know, a whoopee cushion sound. So I just right-click.
Are you more into, like, shuffle mode or slip mode?
You know, I am into thought mode. Okay.
You're right, Phoebe. You do everything on this show. It's really impressive.
Isn't it amazing that I could put together 11 episodes all by myself?
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's so amazing.
Just kidding, you guys. There's a whole damn team. Let's be cute and do the credits together. Okay. We haven't done that.
Are we going to try to do it at the same time?
Yes! Oh my God. Okay.
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 On the count of three.
Okay.
One, two, three.
The So Many White Guys team includes Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joanna Solitaroff, Paula Schumann, Joe Plord, Keegan Zema, Isaac Jones, Noor Wazwaz, and moi, Phoebe Robinson. Our theme song was written by a white dude and it's sung by a bunch of other white dudes. You can find some hot content of me and Michelle on Twitter at WNYC Studios. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Dope Queen Phoebes. And don't you forget, I'm on the road with my stand-up tour. Don't you want to see me IRL?
Go to PhoebeRobinson.com.
Find out where I'm going and get yourself tickets now. See you soon.
And don't forget to subscribe to Adulting.
Yes.
First episode's up now.
Yes. And also, you guys, seriously, come see me in Fort Worth, Texas, June 4th through the 8th. It'll be really fun. Okay, bye.
Bye.
I gotta say, that was actually pretty good.
I felt like it was like chanting and yoga.
It did feel like by the end, I was like, oh, damn, we could start a cult.
This is therapeutic, yeah.
God damn.